Hi, George. Hi, Teddy.
Hi, Debbie. Thank you for taking the time to do this. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my God. Thank you for being willing to speak with me. I love this documentary. Love it.
Well, that's getting to our ears.
I was alive then. I was in junior high when all of this was happening. And I was in high school when the pressman strike happened. And my father worked for the ABC station in Philadelphia his entire life. So I was very in tune with all the news that was happening. And I was drawn to it. So I was always paying attention to stories like what was happening with the Post and with Pentagon Papers and Watergate. And it's amazing how fellow students, even back then when you're 13 years old, how nasty they can be if you try and explain something to them. And why Katharine Graham was right. So to see you pull this together here like this, and to hear this story being told in Katharine's own vote, in her own voice, not just her own words, but her own voice, just elevates this beyond belief. I truly am in love with this and what you guys did. So knowing your background with the docs that you've done before, The Life and Times of Ben Bradley, Becoming Warren Buffett, Nixon by Nixon, the doc on Gloria Steinem, knowing all of this, what made you finally say, it is time to give Katharine Graham her due?
I'll take this one. This is Teddy. So after we finished the Ben Bradley project, this is now 2017, I believe, which is a year. So we had done Becoming Warren Buffett, and then we did Ben Bradley. And after we finished Ben Bradley, we got a phone call from Warren Buffett saying, I loved the Ben Bradley film, but you missed the mark. And we said, oh, thank you, but what do you mean? And he said, you forgot Katharine Graham. She played a small role, but without Katharine Graham, there is no Ben Bradley. And Warren being Warren said, you know, I hope one day you guys would ever consider doing a doc on Katharine. And right then and there, we knew, you know, when Warren talks, you listen. He's one of the brightest minds in the world. So we knew we were going to do a doc on Katharine Graham. We just didn't know when. And when we established our foundation, it's formerly the Coonhard Film Foundation. Now it's called Life Stories. We were able to do that film. Mm-hmm. We finally had the time and the money to do it. And it was a very slow burn. We did it over the course of a few years. We were lucky because we had a lot of interviews from and research from when we did The Newspaper Man, when we did the Nixon film, mm-hmm. The Nixon by Nixon. So we'd already have half of the information at our disposal. So we were well steeped with the subject matter.
And Debbie, I'll add, this is George, two things. One, when we started, you first said, congrats to you two, but it's not us two. We're a huge team. We have a very, very thoughtful, hardworking, brilliant team led by the two of us, our father, Peter, but our editor, Jawad, who's edited and produced, our producer, Jill Cowan, who found the archival that makes up the whole film, our co-producer, Emma Sassoon, but amongst many, many others. And it would be, it was, as Tate said, almost 2 years to make this documentary. But while we're in the discovery phase, and you listen to some of the Nixon tapes, every time we'd have a new turn about and discover new archival pieces, we would just get more invested, more excited, more interested in telling the story. So as Tate said, it started off as a slow burn after we got the phone call and we thought about it with all of our past research. But it was one of the most exhilarating projects while we were working on it, because you heard the tapes, you heard the materials that we found in there. It took a village to make it, but it was just an amazing experience throughout the whole process.
And I'm so glad that when the Oracle says something, you listen to the Oracle, and you did.
Well, it was actually even before the Oracle, because when we were doing the film on Gloria, Gloria told us that Ms. Magazine was seed funded by Katharine Graham. So this woman named Katharine Graham between all those films you've mentioned, she kept on appearing in little roles.
Yeah.
So it was only a matter of time before we put the spotlight on her.
And, you know, and I subscribed to Ms. for a number of years, and I never knew Catherine ponied up the seed money for Gloria. Now, when you decided that you were going to do this documentary, it could have gone a number of ways in your approach for this. How did you decide to go in a relatively linear fashion, although starting with the Pressman strike, which I think was brilliant, because right away it grabs your attention, and number one, you've got footage there that I don't think anybody has seen before, but the whole idea of here is this woman heading up the Post who is now facing this major disruption, and a newspaper is not printed because of this strike, that makes you sit up and take notice. And then you take us back into and build up who is Catherine Graham and where did she come from. So I'm curious how you decided the approach to take in telling this story.
I wish George and I could take credit for starting the film with the strike. That was Jawad, the editor-producer, who said, guys, we need to really hook people in, and nobody really knows about the strike, so let's give them a surprise where when you see the breaking glass, you think that's the burglary at the Watergate,
mm-hmm.
but then you're sort of taken back to say, oh wait, this is not the break-in. So when he suggested that idea, we were immediately hooked. But a lot of our films, every time we veer out of chronology, we always come back to it. So,
yeah.
I'm not answering your question well.
Well, here, so we always usually start with chronology, and some films come out of it, and we make it a more abstract portrait. But the reality is, her story is so dramatic, told in a chronological point.
Mm-hmm.
Without understanding the pressures of her childhood and the complications of her dynamic with her parents, then the suicide of her husband, the passing on and taking over the Post, then the attacks of Nixon in chronological order. It all was an organic, dramatic story that every time we pulled it out of chronology, we found ourselves confused, and we put ourselves in an audience hat and said, we can't leave anyone confused in our film. It doesn't do justice to Kay or the film. So that was the main reason, is for clarity's sake, and because she's already has such a dramatic unfolding of her story.
Absolutely. And I do have to say, when I went with the breaking glass at the beginning of the film, that is, number one, you do think Watergate break-in, and then we see that it's the Pressman strike. But I immediately thought, what a great metaphor for Catherine breaking the glass ceiling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. And you are right. The footage of the protesters with the burning effigy was on 16mm film that we had transferred. And I, when George and I went down to D.C. to interview Don, we showed him the footage, and it was the first time he'd ever seen it. He said,
wow.
I remember it completely well, vividly, but I've never seen that footage.
Wow. That had to be something for Don to see that.
It sure was. He was choking up. Wasn't the helicopter delivering news?
Yeah, that was
when the Pressman strikes, when they shut down the printing press and they had to print in other facilities 100 miles or so away, and the footage of the helicopter landing on top of the building and then delivering the paper, that was transferred from 16mm, I believe, and never distributed before.
Amazing. Now, granted, you had a lot of the archival material because of the prior docs you had done, but I'm curious, and working, of course, with the wonderful Ms. Cowan on this one, how difficult and challenging was the research to dig up more archival materials and photographs and film that we had not seen before or that may have been very scarcely used elsewhere?
Ms. Cowan is a magician. She can pull a rabbit out of a hat. I don't know how she did it. It was a challenge that, you know, she had terabytes of media to work with from those previous projects. So when we challenged her to find new stuff, she buckled down and started digging.
Well, also, you used the word joy. Yeah. Jill loves unearthing new materials, and she loves steeping herself in subject matters that she's passionate by. And Jill would attest this is one of her favorite projects she's ever worked on with us. And so it wasn't feeling like going to work. It was like feeling like going to camp for her in a way. She just, it was excitement every day unearthing this new material.
Oh, I'm right there with Jill on that one. I like nothing better than going down that rabbit hole and digging and digging and digging. And I don't care what lengths I have to go to. I'm going to find something. So I totally get Jill's approach and her passion for this. As all the material was being unearthed, as Jill was amassing it, and you're starting to put this together, did you wait for all the material and really thoroughly plot out the documentary? Or did you start editing, and then as new things were discovered?
Well, mostly started, we used a lot of her audiobook in the early days to just get a story out, and then kept reducing it and replacing it with interview footage or archival. So we had a vision for the main arc, but every time new materials would come in, we would pivot. For instance, we had a really nice scene that we actually ended up cutting for time from the Truman Capote black and white ball in 1966, because Jill found just unbelievable footage. We ended and photographs and material for it. We ended up ultimately cutting the section just for time, and it didn't tell you enough about Kay to justify keeping in the story. But there were many moments that we would pivot our storytelling based on the material. For instance, the stuff Teddy described, the effigy or the helicopter, those changed the way we edited and landed on those certain moments.
Mm-hmm. Now, I love the way that Jawad has cut this, so that we don't have a bunch of talking heads and they're looking off into the distance. Are they talking to the audience, or are they just looking out a window? Everybody that you have in the interviews, they're all spot on. They're looking at the camera. They're looking at us. They are speaking to each individual viewer who is watching this documentary. Are all of these interviews that you have, are they new? Did you pull some of them from your prior works? And then what was...
The majority of them are new. A few of them were taken from The Newspaper Man. But we do use that approach of the... what's that?
iDirect.
The iDirect on the camera. Mm-hmm. So if you Google iDirect, you'll see it's a little contraption we put on the camera. So when we do the interviews, I'm not actually looking at the subject. I'm looking at a mirror of their image. It's pretty crazy.
But it's completely in sync with their eye line, so it looks like they're talking to camera. But what's cool about this, Debbie, on top of it, is the film is now out. But what we're most proud of is at our foundation, Life Stories, we are going to be releasing every one of the interviews that were conducted for this film, along with 500 other interviews that we've produced for other shows and other materials, all for free to the public on our website and YouTube channel. So it's, you'll be able to sit there and hear Don's extended interview, as well as a 30-minute version of his episode with more illustrations. So we're going to do an educational version of the film. We're going to put out an education and engagement guide, and then do an impact screening tour. So this film doesn't end by just broadcast on Amazon. It's going to have a long, long, long road of getting into schools, educational areas, and students and teachers trying to influence the next generation through the lens of the art of the interview. That's our passion here.
Mm-hmm.
But you're spot on that it was important for us to have all of the interviewees looking directly to camera. We find that super effective.
And that is one of the key elements when doing interviews. I mean, granted, I'm on a phone right now, but typically I prefer in-person interviews. I've been doing this for 43 years, and I want to look somebody in the eye when I ask them a question. I want them looking back at me. And you can really connect. And this documentary is all about connecting. We feel Warren Buffett. We really feel his connection with Katharine Graham, Gloria Steinem. And especially, like, Gloria leans into the camera a little bit. Over the decades, when she leans in, it's because she's really passionate. She's really making a point when she does that. And having her look right into your eyes, you feel the power and the importance of what she is saying about Catherine. So it just works so well, and it is so engaging, and it will keep the audience riveted and paying attention. I just so love that technique. I love it.
One other technique we should just make you aware of is the composers who we worked with on many of our films said to us early in production, said, Teddy and George, would you be willing to take a risk and instead of doing a traditional score, let's embrace the synthesizer. Let's do it all synth. Instead of just having it as a little piece, let's really, in order to take this old story and sort of make it new and digital, let's really embrace the synthesizer, which we said, go for it. Let's hear it. And I think that between the filming techniques, the amazing archival, and then this new digital sort of synth sound, it really brings Kay's story into today.
Now, see, you jump
without even touching the current condition of the newspaper.
You jumped the gun on me because I was going to bring up the music, because something that this digital synth does is there are so many moments in the film that are the pressman strike, for example. It's almost like a heartbeat. That the undercurrent of a heartbeat that it's giving those sequences, and it adds another layer of power and importance to it. Yeah, I'm fascinated by the music, the way that you had it done, the approach that you took. There's no brass that we're hearing. I mean, this is the synth. I'm hearing some clarinet in there, maybe some oboe. So I just love what has been put together musically to add to the oral experience, the sonic experience, that also complements us hearing Kay's own voice.
I can't wait to pass on your kudos to them after this.
You know, hats off to you guys with that. Now, something that is very, very striking in this documentary is, of course, the Nixon tapes. But it is the Nixon tapes, and we can actually see the words are there. Chiron is bringing them out on the screen so we can see what's being said between Nixon and Ehrlichman, Nixon and Haldeman, Nixon and Mitchell. But you do it, they are given in the context of what was happening at the Post at the time. So we really get a sense of the venom that Nixon had for Katharine Graham and the Post. And it was never, I think, only one or two instances talking about the Post. It was always her. This was a total witch hunt. He had such hatred for her. And we really get to see that, the way you have balanced that and the context that you give it to us in. Was that a surprise when you went that route, or was that something you had thought about doing?
I mean, Nixon is the gift that keeps on giving. His tapes are just so raw and intriguing and disgusting and venomous, as you said. And what we did was with Jill and Ken Hughes at the Miller Center from who helped us on Nixon and the Newspaper Man, we counted all the times he talked about Kay versus Ben Bradley, and it's amazing how many more times he talked about Kay, almost double or triple. He hated her, and he hated her because she was a woman, in our opinion. We used that Nixon call where he says women are really a pain in the neck. I don't know if they're worth it.
Yep.
It's just shocking. And I don't.
No, we were very. After we premiered the film down in D.C., I met a reporter who's been at the Post for 43 years, and he told me that after Watergate and the secret tapes had started coming out, the transcripts, he was the keeper of informing Kay and Ben Bradley about what Nixon had been saying. And he said, I'm the de facto expert at every single thing Richard Nixon secret tapes in regards to the Post. And he goes, your film had three quotes and tapes that I had never seen, and I am blown away. He goes, this is an unbelievable story, how she was so directly attacked by Nixon, and it was definitely surprising. does. I mean, we knew going into it that she would be attacked personally, but we did not expect to the extent behind the scenes that, that he was doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we love the fact that you use the word Chiron. Yeah, when we started it, they were called Chirons.
When I started in, because I originally started in cable news, local cable news back in 1975, 76. And yeah, they were Chirons, and you hand did your graphics. And so I've always stuck with that term myself.
Yeah, we do too. And then the younger production people all call it lower thirds when we say Chirons.
But you got to educate them. Old is good. Analog is good.
That's
the other thing.
In this age of doing true crime and celebrity, you know, we've stuck to our roots, and we're going to continue to do stories that we find need to be told of interesting people with a moral compass.
That's one that is standout about your works that I the docs that I have seen that you have done. This documentary couldn't come out at a better time in light of what we are seeing happening with Trump and politics and the media right now. And it's almost as if Trump is on the same witch hunt that Nixon was on against Katherine Graham. He's just picking more media now. So I'm curious, with all the research you've done on Katherine, all the interviews that you have done about her, what do you think her take would be in today's world of what is happening to the media, to honest reporting, truthful reporting, and how it is being trashed and ripped apart, and God forbid that Jeff Bezos now owns the Post. But what is your take on how do you think she would feel today?
Yeah, I think Kay would like the new tools at her disposal of 24-hour 24/7 technology to get the news out. I think that she would have the same exact philosophy as she had back then, which is delivering the truth, finding the truth, researching the truth, and telling the truth, regardless of the cost. If it means going up against an administration, she would say that's her responsibility as the head of a publishing company. I don't think she would elaborate more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, as I said, I love this documentary. I can't wait to see all of the interviews that you've done and all the ones you've done on your other documentaries on Life Stories. Fascinating work. Fascinating work. And I look forward to seeing more from you, more truth-telling.
Watch King in the Wilderness. I think you'll really enjoy that one.
Kay in the Wilderness?
King in the Wilderness. It's on HBO, or it's on our YouTube channel for free. It's the last 3 years of Martin Luther King's life.
Okay. I will definitely check that out.
I think you'll enjoy it.
I'll definitely check it out. Gentlemen, this has been so wonderful getting to talk to you about what I think is an important documentary. I hope we get to chat again in the future.
When that's ready.
Oh, I can't wait. George, Teddy, thank you so, so much. And hopefully we'll chat sooner rather than later.
Thanks so much, Debbie. Great to meet you and talk to you.
Same here. Bye-bye.